LGBTIQ people rights continue to stagnate widely in Europe, according to the last rainbow map launched yesterday by ILGA Europe regarding the International Day Against Homophobia, Transphobia and Biphobia. Today we welcome Belinda Deere, Advocacy Officer at ILGA Europe. Good evening.
Good evening. Thanks for inviting me.
The official motto of the European Union is unity in diversity, but to what extent is this right when it comes to LGBTIQ people?
The European Union is indeed very diverse. There's LGBTI people living all over the EU in every land. But of course, we also know that the anti-LGBTI forces are becoming emboldened and more widespread. But that doesn't mean that they're increasing in number per se. And I think in terms of, unity and diversity, the most important thing is what we see in terms of solidarity and allyship and alliances across the continent with LGBTI people and LGBTI organizations, such as the amazing work of activists in countries across the EU. And I like to use an example of Poland when there were all of these kind of increasing restrictions and attacks on pride parades in 2018, 2019, what we then saw was a sudden huge amount of local pride parades springing up all over the place, which is really fantastic. And you know, more pride parades, I think, than any EU country had ever done. And then also, at the same time, what we've been seeing with the more recent attacks on, smear campaigns, let's say, on LGBTI people in Poland, we've actually been seeing public opinion swinging in favor of equal rights for LGBTI people. And we've been seeing, for example, the women's rights activists and LGBTI rights activists coming together in huge demonstrations, based on the various different issues that they're both fighting for, and there's clear solidarity. So I like to use that as a kind of a beacon of example of unity and diversity. Mm-hmm.
So yesterday you launched the Rainbow Map 2021. What are the main findings?
Yes, on the Rainbow Map, it was published yesterday, and the findings reveal widespread and almost complete stagnation on human rights of LGBTI people. Mm-hmm. We're at a moment where governments can actively choose the right way forward. There are legislative proposals and action plans on the table in some countries. And so we're hoping that the Rainbow Map will look very different this time next year. So in previous years, we'd already seen the beginning of stagnation, and now it's really very, very clear. But I can give some broad findings. So against a background of hardly any positive change at all, countries such as Albania, Finland, and Portugal have moved up in the ranking. But it's important to note that this is actually only because of quite small changes that have been implemented. So they're not huge changes, but they've still moved up. Despite a lot of commitments from various governments on family recognition, none of the countries have moved up in terms of partnership or parenthood recognition. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a lot of people will say, well, Montenegro adopted same-sex partnership in the summer, but the issue there is that we won't give points until it's actually being implemented, because what we're seeing is the government is dragging its feet on completing all of the necessary processes to ensure implementation. So we really want to make sure that the governments are held to account rather than just being lauded for adopting something. We need to see it being put into practice. There, we've been reporting positive changes in bodily integrity and legal gender recognition for many years, but actually mm-hmm. there's no change this year for intersex and trans rights, apart from in Iceland. And a positive note is that some countries now have points on freedom of assembly, for example, Bosnia and Herzegovina and North Macedonia, which reflects improvements with safety for public LGBTI events. And obviously, as you know, we've seen in the past year, especially in the context of COVID-19, increased political repression against LGBTI people with a stark rise in socioeconomic hardship and the spreading of LGBTI phobic hatred on the street and online. And so against this backdrop, the response from governments needs to be better and more concrete action to make sure that people are more protected rather than less. LGBTI human rights can't be dropped just because of the challenging circumstances. And interestingly, there's been a lot of legislative processes that actually have been stalled this year. So for example, in Cyprus, the Czech Republic, Denmark, Finland, France, Italy, Kosovo, Lithuania, Moldova, Montenegro, the Netherlands, Sweden, and the United Kingdom. So these have all been stalled. And we've also seen some existing procedures being worsened, specifically legal gender recognition, for example, in Georgia, Spain, and also Northern Ireland. And it is, like, I guess one of the key messages we want to say is that it is easy to say that a lot of this is happening because of COVID-19. With the distraction into the public health response, but actually the reality is a lot more complex. In many countries, progress is being stopped because there's increased political polarization on LGBTI issues, and some governments don't see it as a priority issue. So we really do need governments to relaunch their political commitments, to make sure that legislative processes are carried through, and to make sure that they're fully implemented. And if they do choose to do the right thing, then our rainbow map can look positively very different next year, because there are at least 15 countries, including France, Kosovo, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Czechia and Ukraine, which have legislative proposals, action plans and policy discussions already on the table. So it's not a positive picture at all. We're really calling on governments, but it is also, there's a lot of opportunity kind of if these things get unblocked.
So 2020 was the second year in a row with several countries moving backwards on the Rainbow Index. Although you said reality last year is complex, how pandemic have affected to LGBTIQ people?
So COVID-19 laid bare a lot of the already existing inequalities, particularly regarding health outcomes, access to health, economic inequality, which shines a light on discrimination that LGBTI people face throughout their lives and also when looking for work, housing inequality, domestic violence. It has been a really rough year for LGBTI people. And we've also seen that many of the support programs from the national level are not reaching those most in need. And of course, in worst case scenarios, we've also been seeing governments using COVID-19 as a kind of pretext to pass discriminatory legislation. So this all contributes to, again, the call on governments to really start looking into this in more detail, to really be listening to us and working with us on addressing the already existing issues that have been worsened. As the rainbow map has shown, there is a lot of opportunity to work on this. There are things already even in the pipeline. But then, of course, the broader issue of, socioeconomic inequality and anti-discrimination is really, really key. And so we're beginning our work on that here at LGBTI Europe, looking into how we can ensure that LGBTI people are helped by the social and economic policies that the EU has, and also funding, and also looking at these issues outside of the EU as well, of course.
You refer before, in response to several anti-LGBT actions carried out by Hungary and Poland, the European Parliament adopted a resolution declaring the European Union as a LGBTIQ freedom zone. But the European Commission, on the other hand, hasn't started any infringement procedures yet. What, Ilga, what do you think that the European institutions should do about it?
Both Hungary and Poland are actually currently being investigated under the Article 7 procedure, which has a kind of end worst case scenario as a suspension of voting rights in the council. And they're being investigated for breaches of rule of law regarding media and judicial independence. And of course, our approach at ILGA Europe is that this is really very, very linked. So we've been, you know, so just to explain how it's linked, often in countries where we see declining democracy, there is an attack on media freedom and independence of the judiciary. And both of these things either cause more discrimination against LGBTI people, or LGBTI people have been used to get into that situation. So in order to change fundamentally constitutional judicial structures, you often need constitutional majorities to make those changes, and you get constitutional majorities by making basically the majority vote for you. But often scapegoating of a minority is something that happens. You know, you start a smear campaign against a minority group, designate them as enemy of the nation, tell people you're going to fight that group, and then they'll vote for you. So it's a very common electoral tactic. And then when we see these judicial processes being broken down in terms of checks and balances, obviously then the system is being used to target whichever group the government wants to target. And similar with media. When you now, for example, in Hungary, have media authorities that are censoring LGBTIQ characters from TV shows, censoring LGBTIQ characters from books, suing anyone who is remotely critical of the government. It's clearly very, very linked. So we ask for LGBTI rights to be taken into consideration in both of those procedures against Hungary and Poland, but also we're working on inputting into the rule of law process more broadly being carried out by the EU. So we're calling for Article 7 procedures, but we're also calling indeed for infringement, so going into more broad calling these countries to account via courts. And in September, we submitted with Polish LGBTI organizations a complaint to the European Commission concerning Poland's anti-LGBT resolutions and family charters. And the complaint basically sets out how those declarations introduce discrimination against LGBTI people, breaching the European Council directive, which establishes a general framework for equal treatment in employment and occupation, as well as the Charter of Fundamental Rights, Article 15 on freedom to choose an occupation and right to engage in work, and Article 21 on non-discrimination. And at the moment, the European Commission is still reviewing this. So we will hopefully have movement on that soon. And we're working with the European Parliament as well to try and speed up that process, to try and make sure that they're going to take this into account and actually take infringement proceedings. And the European Parliament is a really, really helpful voice as well in constantly just, you know, reminding and communicating and working with the European Commission, finding out what they need, what information they need to move forward with that.
Now that we are talking about the European Commission, in November, it was presented the LGBTIQ Equality Strategy 2020-2025, based on four pillars: tackling discrimination, ensuring safety, building inclusive societies, and leading the call for equality around the world. How do you see this strategy, and what is needed to be done from the European institutions?
The strategy is a really great step from the European Commission. It's a really positive change of approach by the EU towards LGBTIQ equality. They are basically paving the way for themselves to take a leading role in ensuring that all member states work with the EU to take concrete steps forward for LGBTIQ people, and also to therefore get out of this current period of stagnation and regression that we're seeing across a lot of the continent. And it's also acknowledged key structural issues that have been laid bare by the pandemic. So the timing was very good, actually, in that sense. It does set out a clear work program for a wide range of services in the European Commission in relation to LGBTI rights. It's committed to being true to the values set out in the EU treaties, both in areas where the European Commission has competences, like, for example, proposing legislation to finally ensure that parents can move freely across member states without losing their parental status, to taking a leadership role and working with member states in areas where change needs to happen on a national level, such as banning so-called conversion therapies and ensuring legal gender recognition procedures based on self-determination. We also see it as a really good roadmap for a range of other governmental and institutional actors, such as local and regional authorities, who are really key to making societal change and legal change happen at the local level. And I would say it's also been very helpful for NGOs as well, as a kind of indication of what the European Commission and member states, possibly, depending on the member state, are happy to work on and have as a priority for the coming years. And one of our key messages for the Commission now is that the strategy needs to be owned by every Directorate General, which is like a ministry. So, for example, the commitments on socioeconomic equality, this needs to be owned by DG Employment. Commitments on health need to be owned by DG Santé. We need to see kind of all of the different departments coming together so that we have like a broad range of actors and so that it's more efficiently implemented.
Regarding trans people rights, here in Spain there is an ongoing debate about a draft law to regulate gender self-determination and depathologization of transsexuality. How this new law should guarantee trans people rights?
So the law should be drafted in accordance with international human rights standards. And that is to say that it should state that legal gender recognition processes should be accessible, affordable, administrative, fast, and based on self-determination. And that means including no restrictive requirements. Self-determination is the basis of legal gender recognition processes in Belgium, Denmark, Luxembourg, Norway, Ireland, Iceland, and Malta. Mm-hmm. And because I know of the discourses that have been going around, and this has also been a big problem in the UK recently. So I'm responding here to one of the claims. It's important to note that in all of those countries that I just listed, in no cases has a self-determination model resulted in increased incidents of fraud or misuse of the legislation. Mm-hmm. And of course, such a legal gender recognition procedure would be incredibly important for improving the quality of life of trans people and reducing discrimination, because of course legal gender recognition is the way in which trans people can be themselves and have their gender expression, their exterior look, let's say, match their ID documents. And when it doesn't, all sorts of complications occur and all sorts of discrimination happens. Transgender Europe has really good kind of series of testimonies. Recently it was on freedom of movement for trans parents, where when you have cases, for example, this is one of the kind of everyday situations where the ID does not match who they are, then when they're crossing the border, let's say with their children are taken away from them because the border forces think that they are abducting someone else's children, the person that's on the ID card. So this is just one example, let alone the violence. And also importantly, regarding depathologization, It is really important that Spain does this, of course, because in 2019, the World Health Organization formally depathologized trans identities. It removed all mental health diagnoses from the 11th edition of the International Classification of Diseases and Related Health Problems, the ICD-11. With the current mental health diagnosis required to access legal gender recognition in Spain, when Spain also ratifies ICD-11, this will create an impossible legal circumstance.
Related to this, although during the past years, feminism and LGBT movements have been fighting hand by hand, we have recently seen how so-called feminism movements have been critic with gay and especially trans people. Considering that whatever LGBT rights are violated, so are women's rights, do you think there is like a hidden agenda to counterfight both movements?
Yeah, I think we all know that there's been for a number of years now an attack, an agenda indeed, to attack the concept of gender, which is a concept that's really crucial to feminist and LGBTI movements. It basically is a modern conception of gender equality. It explains why we experience violence, and that's one of our common struggles. Because something that I found very interesting was in the FRA LGBTI survey, and actually also in other gender equality surveys, of course, like when you look at the perpetrator of violence based on discrimination, it's like in each for women and for LGBTI people, it's like over 80% it's men perpetrated, right? So this is what we need to be looking at. What is it, you know, this is a common fight. So this kind of agenda, let's say, that's been attacking the concept of gender has been going on for some time, but it was in a way hidden for some time. But I would direct listeners to the European Parliamentary Forum, which has been doing some really good research on the funding and the actors behind the campaigns, which are mainly Vatican and US-based Christian right, as well as Russian actors. And they were behind them, basically the campaigns of the anti-gender movement, mm-hmm. which was a rhetoric that was driving a wedge between feminist and LGBTI movements for much of the past decade. And we've seen this gaining ground in countries which are more supportive of feminism, let's say, than countries that are less supportive of feminism in the form of, let's say, the anti-trans narratives, so otherwise known as TERF. I would say we see a kind of mirroring of the strategies of the anti-gender movement and the anti-trans, let's say, movement now, which I think are very interesting, and I think we need to think about. Yeah. And so, indeed, I agree with the question that there is a hidden agenda to actually fight both movements by making them fight each other. And it's really also very interesting to observe that a lot of the anti-trans rhetoric is formulated in the same way that anti-gay rhetoric was in previous decades. So, for example, when you think about the rhetoric of orientation being a choice or some form of tactic, and the people are a danger to children. And I think this should ring alarm bells for everyone. Fortunately, there's been a lot of good work and alliances created by feminist movements and LGBTI movements, and especially those feminist movements that are more intersectional, not only on this topic, but regarding other minority groups as well.
So we talk to Belinda Deer. She's advocacy officer at ILGA Europe. A great pleasure to have you with us, and good evening.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks.
Thank you very much.